Yes, so I will try to talk today. Yeah, yes, first of all, it's a great pleasure for me to make a talk here, of course. So I would like to try to make a talk about the work which we are just completing together with Joe Imre. And first of all, I want to ask you to excuse me because of everything which I'm going to talk today will be, at least theoretical, but will be extremely simple, so I will just give you very
quick.
Okay. And yes, and it will be about phase measurement. So all of you know, you saw it's a huge amount of experiments now are done in all the variants with quantum dot. But in all cases, except for only one group, these experiments, people measure the current, the transmission for the quantum dot. And unfortunately, there is only one group doing experiment with phase measurements. And for me, to some extent, this is just for me the most weak part, because there are a lot of theoretical predictions, and they should be compared only with only one experiment done in, say, 97. I'm afraid you have already during this program a couple of talks, just the talks from the experiment from Wojtek Heiblum and some theoretical talks on this subject. So I have to repeat something, but I think at least the visitors are all have changed since that time. So these are the experimental papers on this stuff, and basically I think I will talk. I will try to explain some features of this experiment, and maybe I start with some few words about this experiment. So, what is the experiment? This is the standard, the most, it looks like the textbook Aronov-Bohm experiment. So, they have emitter from which you may which is the source of electrons, and the electrons are collected at the collector, and they may reach collector via two paths, one reference arm and another. They may have small magnetic field perpendicular to this plane, so that by changing the magnetic field, they change the phase of it, so they will be able to see these Aronov-Bohm oscillations. And so this is just the most physical part is hidden here. They have here the small quantum dot, and they are going to try to investigate the physics of this quantum dot. This is just the drawing, and this is the picture. You see they look pretty the same. So if you have, just again, the trivial stuff, if you have such a device, the current which you measure at the emitter is the sum, the amplitude is the sum of two amplitudes, the amplitudes of the electron transmitted through quantum dot and the amplitudes of the electron transmitted through the reference arm, and the current is correspondingly the squared sum of these two amplitudes. These parts are trivial, and this part contains the interference between these two guys. And due to magnetic field, very weak magnetic field, this is the only result of magnetic field. Due to magnetic field, magnetic field is so weak that it does not change anything inside the quantum dot. So due to the magnetic field, you have this phase here, which is proportional to magnetic flux, or just magnetic field. And then the second thing, you see, you have quantum dot, and you have this additional electrode plunger gate voltage. By changing the voltage at this electrode, you may change the parameters of a quantum dot. Actually, you increase the size of a quantum dot, and the quantum dot grows, this island of electrons grows, and it starts to take electrons one by one from the leads. So now your amplitude transmitted through a quantum dot is a function of gate voltage, and by changing the magnetic field, you are able to measure both the amplitude of this transmission of this transmission for quantum dot and the relative phase, the change of phase from one value of voltage to another value of voltage. And actually, I just show you the experimental picture how we did it. So this is the picture for, say, for zero magnetic field or for fixed value of magnetic field. They see the, okay, it's some background because you have the large current for the reference arm, and you see the nice Coulomb blockade peaks. And then you may, say, fix all the voltages, for example, corresponding to this point, and start to change the magnetic field. And you will see the small oscillations of the current. And this is just only these oscillations are plotted at this curve. So for example, you may see oscillations corresponding to this point, oscillations corresponding to this point, to this, and to this. By measuring the amplitude of these oscillations, you see the amplitude, you measure the amplitude of transmitted current. By measuring the relative phase, you measure the phase. So this is the idea of the experiment. And it, okay, this is actually was done in 97, and they found these nice results where they saw, yes, they saw these nice peaks in the amplitude, and they saw this increase by pi at the resonance and this phase drop between the resonances. And for me, actually, okay, this is the most interesting stuff in this field, but this is not what, because all of this, all this stuff has been done actually, okay, it was done experimentally in 97, and so this is not the subject of my talk today. This is really surprising, but actually I would say, okay, I like it because of, we have our own explanation, but still actually, so this is my understanding that somebody have to repeat this experiment. So this is nice, this is phase drops. This is the main, it was the main question. This is really nice, but okay, only one experiment, and actually only five of them. Because what is surprising here? The surprising fact here is there are three surprising facts. This minus pi jump, then the fact that the jump is much more narrow than the phase increase, and the fact that all the resonances are similar. The most attention was paid just to these phase jumps, but I would say that just phase jumps is not enough, because in very naive picture, you all the probability to have phase jump in the Coulomb blockade value is about 3/4. So if you have, say, at random, four valleys, in three of them you will have phase jump without any additional modification. So even some trivial explanation for me is also may exist. So actually it's for experimentalists. For me it's like, okay, somebody have to repeat this experiment and to see it more carefully, and there are a lot of theoretical predictions how to kill this effect and so on.
What is the conductance at this point? Conductance through the dots at the point where the jump occurs?
It's minimum. It's
minimum or zero?
It may be minimum and it may be zero.
So phase may jump without getting conductance to zero?
If the width of yes, I mean, but when you the jump will have a finite width.
Okay.
And this is just yes. Yes, it's not a jump. Yes.
The second plot here, magnitude of oscillations, I think it is proportional to the transmission probability, to the transmission amplitude through the dot.
Yes.
And it looks to me like.
Okay, it is consistent with zero. It's consistent with zero.
Can we just put this sticker? So it is zero, right? Yeah.
It's consistent with zero. Okay.
It's only the flux dependent part is zero. There is a background.
No, but here it's not. Here it is background. But here it's.
that says magnitude of Fermi oscillation.
Yes.
So the flux dependent.
Okay. And so that was the situation.
That zero doesn't mean anything.
It's good enough, say, to have zero. Then the problem is how to explain why you will have zero at the series of the values. One zero is okay. It's that's what I say.
No, but if there's one zero, then next value is also going to give you zero. Is probability close to one? Every second value, actually.
I may say how I estimate this probability threefold. Suppose you have the usual system where you have the usual means that you have this standard sequence of level occupation. So you have spin 0, spin 1 half, spin 0, spin 1 half, spin 0, spin 1 half. Then in all spin 1 half valleys, you will have this phase. It will not be a jump. It will have a finite width, but it will be phase drop.
Yes, and for spin 0,
with probability 1 half, you will have these guys. So the problem is how to make a model where you have all this width.
Right, but if it happens once, so the spin 0, then in the next...
Maybe not. If you have chaotic quantum dot, there is no prediction.
That's exactly what I mean. For chaotic, it does happen. For chaotic with large charging energy compared to level spacing, if it happens once, suppose, to start with, there are no spins. Then if it happens in value number n, then it happens in next charging energy or delta, where delta is a level spacing, number of values. Because basically when you go from one layer to another, the conductance at the minimum is given by many levels, and you change only one of them. And I think it was...
Yes. That was such paper. Yes. If you have, yes.
But the first one, it's an improbability 1 half, so still, I mean, if it's one experiment, it's hard to say, but if they repeat it, I don't know. Several samples.
In really big, it was such an explanation by Yuval Geffen and Korpas. Yes, if you have really big quantum dot, you may have such a memory. Yes.
Right.
Okay. So, and...
People bend the tension, not so simple. We shouldn't discuss it
now. Okay, so that was the experiment of 97, but then in 98, in some sense, it's a new era in this field started. The Kondo effect was observed in quantum dots, and here I think it was the first experiment, the first experimental group who reported the observation of the Kondo effect. And here just, it's not related to my talk, I just saw the best picture of this Kondo effect, which I was able to find in the literature, or maybe one of the best. So this is the current stage. And and about the time, this group of Monte Hybrim also took to this measurement of the Kondo effect. They have tried to measure the Kondo effect in the effect of Kondo effect on the transmission phase. And more or less simultaneously, but I think a little bit before the experiment, there appeared the theoretical paper on the calculation of the phase in the Kondo region in the Anderson impurity model. And here I give the abstract, and actually the main part of the paper was done by numerical renormalization group, so I can say nothing about, and actually the paper is written also in this way that you could not, and you can find only the list of methods which we used, but Okay, I have formally nothing against this paper. They will only think, okay, they say in detail. And basically the main content, okay, the main new thing which we have done is that we have found, okay, yes, if you would. Yes, so what may be done? What may be done easily in this field? Easily you may consider the case of high temperature, say temperature of order of gamma or larger. And in this case you have two nice peaks in the transmission, and the phase increases by pi at the resonance, then decreases by pi in between, and then again decreases at the resonance. This increase, it's natural, it's like Brett Wigner, it's what everybody expects, and this decrease I will just explain in a couple of transparent. So this is really simple. Then there is another limit, which is hard, but there exists the explicit solution, this beta ansatz. I could not do beta ansatz, but I believe in this explicit solution, and this is what everybody expects it actually from in this field. So at exactly zero temperature, you should have this, what is Kondo effect? Kondo effect is the increase of conductance here in the valley. So in the beta ansatz, this increase saturates at the unitary limit. So you have this.
Can you tell what is the phase of the lexis?
The temperature. So from high temperature to zero temperature. Voltage.
And the model was just Anderson model.
Yes, this is just. And this is okay. This is okay. Yes, the low temperature and high temperature, so high temperature and low temperature limits from the paper. So, at zero temperature, you expect everybody knew before then that you should have this increase after unitary limit, and then this broad plateau, and about the phase. Again, everybody expected that instead of this increase by pi, you will have increase by half of pi. Then you will have this plateau of half of pi. And then again, increase. And then there is, okay, something in between, which, as they claim, may be done only by numerical randomization group. And actually, what I'm going to show that this something in between may be done actually in this part about the phase behavior may be done extremely easy in actually a couple of lines in this region. And actually all the interesting phase behavior.
Pi, in the left hand figure you go to pi and then you go down again. And this, the right hand side of that figure also go down two steps?
No, it's okay. You see, the left and right are the same. You started at zero and end up at pi here, and here also you start at zero and end up at pi.
Yeah,
so only
in the meantime you go down.
Here no.
In the left hand side.
Yes.
And do you also go down in the right hand side?
No. For Anderson purity model no.
From the
quantum dot it depends on the quantum dot, I would say.
In the Anderson purity model I think you can describe only one location.
Yes. Yes. So then,
you measure something which is related to the quantum dot, you have many values. So the question was, I think, what happens with this phase when you go to
next value,
one value before that?
I will show one example of what may happen. But no, but actually, if it's the trivial model like Anderson impurity, so if you have this 0, 1/2, 0, 1/2, then it's nothing interesting. You may the probability 1/2, you may drop down or not, and then you have again you will repeat the same thing in the most simple model. Then you consider each couple of levels as a separate Anderson impurity model. Okay, and here I show what will have been measured. So this is again a little bit more dirty because the quantum dot is smaller and the device is more complicated, but more or less the same device. So you have two pumps, you have small quantum dot. This is additional electrode, which is the barrier actually. And what is shown here, this is the usual Kondo experiment without any Aronov bomb. So we just close this path and measure the Kondo effect. It's not that nice as that experiment from Delft, which I have shown, but it's more or less of the same quality as the Goldhaber-Gordon's first experiment. So you have these charging resonances, and here, which we believe to be a Kondo valley, you have increase of the conductance with decreasing temperature. All the same, you have you have decrease of the conductance with increasing bias. So this looks like Kondo, quite far from the unitary limit, but still it's Kondo effect. And they done, ideologically exactly the same procedure. So they measure this conductance as a function of gate voltage. Then they change magnetic field and measure these many traces with magnetic field. The pictures does not look so nice. You see some modulations of amplitude and so on. So it's more hard here to extract the information, but they did that. And they believe that they did it correctly. And this is basically the main result. So this is what is expected to be the Kondo valley. And Motti-Heibloom, now comes the interpretation of this result. So Motti-Heibloom consider as the main result the fact that here you do not have
What is visibility?
Visibility is just the amplitude of these Aronov bomb oscillations. Yes. So it's not the transmission, it's square root of transmission. Yes. It's square root of current. So they consider as the main result this fact that they see here more than pi. I do not know. This is clear that you have another levels here and you have a lot of other stuff here. So the trivial answer why you have here more than pi is that it's not Anderson impurity model. It's something else. This is not constructive answer because it's not an explanation. I say it's not Anderson impurity model, but I don't say what is it. But this is the trivial answer, and actually this is what they say also. And for me, the only clear part here is that you have this nice plateau. So the phase is saturated at the plateau here. And you see what is, if you say that this may be found only by numerical renormalization group at temperature close to T-Kondo. What you have here, you have this very deep valley, which means that you are very, very far from the unitary limit in the transmission, but in the phase you already have a plateau. So this is, for me that was the most surprising thing in that experiment. And actually, if you look very carefully to numerical data, you also will find the indication of this stuff. We also have some pictures where we have some valleys and still in practically plateau in the face. But without any explanation, it seems to me that they just do not understand.
There was a question about visibility of the face. That is also drawn from the figure D.
I mean, it's extracted from the figure B, yes.
But we have to look at also at the minima or the maxima. How has that been defined? Do you know that?
You should somehow approximate it by single harmonic. So you should approximate it by sign with some amplitude and with some phase. This I do not know how we define this approximation, how to extract from this data this single harmonic. So this is question not to me. But then if you have this, then it's clear what is plotted. This is the amplitude of this single harmonic, and this is the phase of this single harmonic. And always phase is defined up to 2 pi, so you see only the relative phase. So the change of phase from one curve to another.
How did you show that you need a prediction for t equal to 0 between sat and the loss of plateau 2?
Sorry?
what you showed before was for the t equal to zero.
Yes.
You can certainly look at a plateau.
Yes. So it's clear. It's clear that if you okay. Or maybe it's not. It's very expected. But if you will go down to very very low, you decrease temperature by say 100 compared to what we have. You will still have a plateau here, but also you will have a plateau here. But we have too high temperature, so we have no plateau here, but already a plateau here.
But it has never been observed. A plateau like the one you mentioned.
No, plateau like that in conductance, it was actually, this in that experiment from Delta, I have shown it was this plateau. In conductance, yes. And actually, in the last experiment in Weissman, we also saw the plateau in, okay, something like plateau in conductance, but when the phase became much more complicated, which is. Okay. Okay, so this is solved. Okay, and now I'm coming to this simple explanation. And actually, okay, the explanation should start just from basic thing. So actually, what is actually measured in this Aronov Bohm experiment? All the data before we were for case without spin, but now we have spin. Oh, okay, all the formulas before. So we have quantum dot, we have this two amplitudes. But we may have, say, electron spin up and electron spin down. And so you may have one contribution to the current for electron spin up, which goes this way and interfere with itself. And you have another contribution to the current for electron spin down. Say, for any orientation of the spin of the dot, you have these two contribution. So here, actually, you do not measure a single amplitude. You measure this whole sum of over all possible relative orientation of spin and of spin of electron and of spin of electron and spin of the dot. And then the trivial trick is that the transmission amplitude through this reference sum does not depend on spin. The magnetic field is very weak, so it doesn't depend on spin. And then what you actually measure in the experiment is not the single amplitude, but the sum of all possible amplitudes for all, okay, here you have only two non-trivial amplitudes for spin 1/2, but in general you have the sum of all possible amplitudes. And even it was first observed by Areg and Geffen, where they consider the spinless case, but they consider the temperature. So you may even have, for example, you may have even have the thermal excitations in the quantum dot. And in this case, you will have the different amplitudes with the temperature weights. So you will sum up the different amplitudes with the weight E to minus energy over temperature. But that was the proposal of Areg and Geffen. So you have to calculate or to find this sum of amplitudes. And to do this, okay, let me just show you. So you always start with Anderson impurity model. So this is the Anderson impurity model. You have the sum of energies of electrons in the leads. C is annihilation operator for electron in the lead. A is creation operator for electron in the dot. You have only one level. So you have electrons in the lead. You have tunneling between leads and dot. You have energy of electrons in the lead. And you have interaction. This is trivial Anderson impurity model. Okay, not trivial, but it's, I don't know, 30 years old, 40 years old. Then you have to map this model onto the quantum problem. And the result of this mapping, it will be this Schrieffer-Wohl transformation. The result of this mapping will be the Hamiltonian like this. You have, again, the electrons in the leads. And you have the impurity became now the superposition of the sum of the two things. You may have potential scattering on this impurity, and you may have scattering on the spin of the impurity. So you have this interaction with the spin of the impurity, and the interaction with the potential scattering on the impurity. Okay, trivial formula. Again, spin of electron is defined here with these annihilation and creation operators for electrons in the leads. Because I have two leads, you have the matrices always. You may have these J and V, maybe left, right, left, left, right, right. But that's simple complexification. And everybody, actually, in this field, almost everybody just considers this spin-spin interaction part as the most interesting. This is the part which will be renormalized and so on. But it happens just the source of the answer. Is that happens that just for the problem which I consider, just the potential scattering happens to be the crucial importance. Okay, and here I just, okay, I told you, it's all very simple. All the formulas are very simple. So here is this Schaeffer-Wolf transformation. How to find, for example, yes, you may consider, so I have the lead and the dot. You may consider a process in which electron jumps to the lead, and then the same electrons with the same spin jumps to the dot. The amplitude is T square divided by energy denominator. And in terms of Condé Hamiltonian, it's V plus G over 2. And you may have another process when electrons spin down opposite to the dot, jumps, or opposite to the spin of the dot, jumps to the dot, and then jumps back. In this case, again, it's T square divided by another denominator, and this is V minus G over 2. And you trivially extract from that these two couplings, anti-ferromagnetic coupling and scalar coupling. And okay, I just show you the formula. So the magnetic coupling is always positive, which means it's anti-ferromagnetic. The quantum dot wants to have spin opposite. So this is, it has almost fixed sign, and it's always positive. And the scalar coupling, change the sign. It is positive at the first half of the valley, and it's negative second half. And now, what I have to do with this, I just have to calculate the transmission amplitudes. And actually, what I need the transmission amplitudes. I need a real part and imaginary part. I want to consider the phase. But both of them I need only in the leading order of perturbation theory. So, okay, this is just guide for the eye. So this is Breit-Wigner formula, which is actually wrong in the at the resonance. But it's, I may expand it far from the resonance, and it happens that it gives the single, the first term, the real part, it's just trivial second order perturbation theory. Everybody knows it's trivial. And the imaginary part in the leading order also is the same as is given by Wigner, by Breit-Wigner formula. It may be found by some simple perturbation calculation, or maybe, I think it may be found in some more general way, but it always like this. And actually, so this is the approximate formula. So both terms here are small. But this will be enough for me just until the end of the talk. So I have two amplitudes for parallel spins, real and imaginary parts, and for opposite spins, real. There is no spin fleet. So opposite spins means that dot is spin up, electron is spin down, but electron is transmitted, and after that it's still spin down, because I want this electron to interfere with another arm. So I have these two amplitudes, and
so no, there is no spin flip. It's not relevant for the.
Yes. Spin flip is not relevant for it. Is not measured. Spin flip process is not measured in this experiment. And in the experiment, as I told you, I measure the sum of these two amplitudes. And now all what I have to do is, so I have this formula from the Anderson impurity model. All what I have to do is just to write these couplings, okay, of these coefficients in terms of the coupling constant from the Condé model. And this is done in this trivial way. So in this case, you remember, one of the energy was V plus 1/2 of G. So I have V plus G minus I, some coefficient. Mu is density of states. V plus G over 2 squared. This is for this amplitude. And here I have V minus G minus imaginary part. And what it's amazing here, you see, it's That's actually the most. You see that in the real part, the spin dependent, the part in the real part of the sum of the amplitude, the spin dependent part, this J, just cancel each other. So the real part of the amplitude for this orientation in this orientation contains no contribution from the condor. The real part of the amplitude is only due to scalar scattering. So that's actually the main thing. On the other hand, the imaginary part, because I square them here, the imaginary part knows about both of them, scalar and magnetic part. And that is actually the end of the story. So this is real part, this is imaginary part. I have simple formulas for this real part. It's terrible. I have shown you the picture. There are simple analytical formula for real part. And for imaginary part, for J, for this condor coupling, I may now use the renormalization group. I start to do this, Kuo-Mann renormalization group procedure for my condor Hamiltonian. I will change parameters of a Hamiltonian, but in this formula, the only result of this procedure will be that I should replace my J by renormalized value. So I may use this formula. I may use J, write J as like one of the logarith of T over T condor.
And if you don't do that, do not replace J, but by the renormalized value, what you would get
in the case? Okay, I will show just the picture at the next
slide. But I think that I have it. So what you're after is the phase is a function of the gate voltage.
Yes.
Which is here hidden in the parameters, what, V naught and J?
Yes, it's hidden in V naught and in T condor.
Which depends on the gate voltage.
It's
hidden in V0 and J. Yes. Right? Yes. J bare. The condor is something
on top of them. So can you tell how V0 and J depend on the gate
voltage in your picture, in your guess?
Okay, this is V0, this is J0, and these are the formulas.
Okay, so if without.
And this is actually, you see, here you have the node of V. This means that in between you should always have half of pi.
Right,
so here, at this point, real part vanishes. So exactly in the middle of a valley, you always have only imaginary part. This means you have only half of pi.
So then I don't understand why you need any logarithmic normalization and all this fancy stuff with conda if you already have what you need, right? If you look at these two pictures, V naught and J naught, it just gives you what you need, right?
Maybe I just could simply. Okay, this is the result. So if I use V naught and J naught, I get this picture. At this point, exactly in the middle of a valley, I have a node of V naught. This means that here I have only imaginary part in my amplitude. This means that here I always have half of pi,
right,
exactly at this point. But here or here, my V naught is much larger than real part is proportional to V naught, which is small. Uh-huh. But imaginary part is proportional to V naught square or J naught square. So if I do not use renormalization group, then imaginary part is always much smaller than real part. This means that I may have only something very close to zero or pi. And this is what I have.
So you need to have J larger than V naught.
I want to have. Yes, I want to have nu J squared my much larger than nu V naught.
And V naught go through zero.
And V naught has zero, so at some point it always so, but in general it's not so.
So in general you can tune the gate voltage and get.
Yes, there is. This is what I said, but this is three. Okay, this is three.
There is a region of gate voltages where mu j squared is much larger than mu, you know, right? Because it cannot go through zero. This
correct. You have this curve, you have this finite slope here. So you, if you want to consider this as a region, yes, it's correct.
You will always have a finite slope.
Yes. Okay. You have this point where you always have half of pi, and the width of this guy is gamma. The width of this phase, okay, let's call it phase lapse or not, but its width is gamma. Here you have gamma, and here you have gamma. So it's fine for high temperature, but it's not what you expect, right, for very low temperature. And actually, so this is what is shown at this picture. I start to decrease the temperature, and I see these okay lines. The black part is the lines. I may do calculation only for temperature much larger than Deconda. I use only the trivial perturbation, the trivial renormalization group. So this is the black lines where I only believe in my calculations. But here I'm sure. Here, for example, say for this line. Here the temperature is much smaller than Deconda, so I believe that here it should be like beta and that, so it should be something like half of pi. So the dotted line is just my hand drawing. I just use some smooth curve which goes to first to half of pi and then goes to this curve. And this is actually, if you, again.
So if you can just talk in terms of parameter, so you have parameter on gamma and I guess the level, the epsilon d, right?
Yes, this is epsilon d.
Or gamma and u, rather, sorry. Oh. Gamma and u. So in terms of...
So this is epsilon d divided by... Gamma is 20 times smaller than u, for this calculation.
So I wanted to just ask you, what temperature should you plug in your formulas in order to get this most...
Okay. No.
No,
the temperature should be, I would say, okay, it's pure theoretical calculation, I would say. So
yeah,
temperature here is, here, I think, here is temperature is gamma, and from curve to curve, it decreases by a factor of 4. So this is something like 1,000 less. Gamma divided by 1,000.
My question is about theoretical calculations.
So okay. So, okay, this is temperature 1,000th of gamma, and gamma is 1/20th of charging energy.
Sorry. There's parameter log t over tk, right, in
your
calculation. And this parameter must be, I guess, smaller than something in order to get this pledge. Smaller than something in relative to gamma over u. So I just asked, what is the relation? How small log must become in order to get this curve?
Partial answer to the question is the what is written in blue.
Yes, here...
but I want to
I mean, it's
back to parameters.
But understand, this means that you're very far from decay.
Right.
Yes, this means that... yes.
So, you don't put it in terms of gamma over u? Is it gamma over u or gamma over square?
You see, it's... say, for smallest temperature, I have the conductance 1/5 of unitary limit. And this is this should be, on the other hand, it's 1 over logarithm squared. So this is 1 over...
It's not a fundamental constant. I just want... There are two input parameters as far as I understand, gamma and u, and there's one dimensional ratio, gamma over u. So I just want... Well, we can ask...
No.
Log 2 over tk, and this 0.2 is about 4.
2.
4. 2.
So my guess is that the smallest values of log t over tk which are used were of the order of 2.
Okay, so I'll ask in different ways. Suppose I change gamma over u by a factor of 1,000. Okay, I make gamma over u 1,000 times less than in your calculation.
Yes.
Okay. So then log will also must be 4 or 2 in order to get this flat curve. Or
yes.
So it remains 2 or 4, and it's just the same number, regardless gamma over u.
No. Log t of t, it's, you see, what I compare? I compare
They compare new J squared and
yes, I compare new J squared and new V. New V is of the order gamma over U. So log should be square root of this.
Okay.
Yes, and okay, so this is one thing, yes, you see, this is this high sensitivity of the phase to the Condé effect than of the conductance to the Condé effect. But there is, if you, okay, there is also this some fine structure. You see, it's almost trivial, but it is here. So what you have, we have this first, we have this shoulder, then we have some increase, and then we have some decrease. And surprisingly, if, okay, I do not know, do the experiments pretend to be so careful to see this stuff, but if I look to the experimental picture, what I see here, this is actually they changed not temperature, and they changed the strength of the car, they just changed gamma here. So we have here large gamma and here smaller gamma. So you see for largest gamma, they have this plateau. And for small gamma, you have smaller gamma, you have this, say, beginning of a plateau, then small increase, small decrease, small increase. I'm not sure, is it statistically significant, this because you see, it's more difficult to do. This is at the minimum of a transmission, so it's more difficult.
The non-monotonicity.
Yeah, yes. So, but, okay. At least it looks consistent with our picture. Yes, and then, what we tried to do is just we tried to, because it's okay, that was just the explanation of basically the existing numeric with only small addition of new stuff. We tried to repeat more or less the same stuff with situation of, if you have some more exotic situation in the quantum dots, and the standard candidate for this more exotic behavior is just the spin one valleys in the quantum dots, and it's okay. It's trivial to generalize the formula. So this is the amplitude which is measured in the experiment for any value of the spin of the dot. So it contains again the sum of these guys. So the formulas they became long, but they are still the same trivial. The true complexification, but okay, it's not also hard for me. It's that now Jij became the true metric. So you have to diagonalize it, and you have to consider two coupling constant, and it's actually have been done recently, or some interesting physics of that have been done, considered recently. But after that, you have two coupling constants, you may renormalize them, and in the region which I am able to consider, in the region of, in the perturbative region, you may renormalize them again by the trivial Poisson formula. And, okay, I may show you the formulas, but I don't want to. Okay, so this is basically what we have considered. We have considered the situation where you may have two levels in the quantum dot, and you may exchange interaction in the quantum dot, so that you put electron to the level A, but second you put electron not to another, and you do not put another electron to the level A, but you put electron to another level B, and you got the value with spin one. So that the energy of two electrons A and B with spin one is smaller than energy of any other two electron combinations. And you may trivially repeat all these calculations and get to the answer. I just show you the interesting features of this result which we have found. And the first interesting features, which was just surprise for us, and as I understand, at least nobody published it. The first surprising feature was is not related to the condo, to the face. The first interesting feature, we all get used to the fact that in Anderson impurity model, you always have this anti-ferromagnetic coupling. What happens in this model? In this model, it happens that if you have this spin 1/2 valley, okay, here you always have this anti-ferromagnetic coupling for spin 1. But the price for that is that here, just below this, in the spin 1/2 valley, just below the peak, you always have ferromagnetic coupling. At least in the, you may have these two couplings. So at least the larger of them is always ferromagnetic. And this means that if you will do condo experiment for such system, what you will see? You will see condo effect here. You will see condo effect here, but here, just below the peak, you will not see the condo effect. So you will stay in this spin 1/2 valley, but you will not see the condo effect.
Which means what? What will be the conductance at zero temperature?
If I, in addition, tune a little bit, you see, I am cheating a little bit. I am skipping the problem of the second coupling. If I choose the symmetric coupling, I may have here the conductance which is determined only by the potential scattering. So it's of the same order of magnitude as it was. It will be, say, twice smaller than it was at temperature, at high temperature.
So if the conductance is zero temperature, this particular point will be large or small?
Small. It may be small. If I choose the symmetric coupling, of my quantum. If I don't do that, then you may have this, okay, this considered by you, this two-stage condo effect. So you first,
go to the lab, measure the conductance at zero temperature. What will you see?
Then you will see first the decrease of conductance. You just freeze your quantum dot. First you see the decrease of conductance, and then you see back increase of it due to the second small coupling at much smaller temperature.
So at zero temperature, the conductance will be large?
Yes.
And there will be condo effect?
Yes.
Okay, that's not what you're saying before.
Unless you do the symmetric coupling, or unless you do not go to extremely small temperatures. I say what I say. Okay. So this is okay. I just illustrated this by picture. So what may happen? Suppose you have this. Okay, this is the popular experimental setup. As I understand now. So suppose you have your quantum. So this is the gate voltage, and you have some external parameter. You have some strong magnetic field. So you may, by some external parameter, change the configuration change everything about your quantum. These are two Coulomb blockade peaks. And suppose you have some level crossing inside the quantum dot. This means that you have, say, instead of spin 0 valley, at some point you have some level crossing and you have turned to spin 1. It's natural that here you have no condo, here you have condo. Okay, you have some interesting physics here, but in general you have spin 1 condo here. And what we say, and it's trivial, but here what you see at spin 1/2 here and here, you should see condo before this level crossing, and after that you will not see, it will be hard to see condo, at least hard to see condo here. You will have some suppression of the condo here.
One should say perhaps that these two couplings in the best experiments can be tuned independently with another set of voltages.
And actually, experimentalists always try to make them symmetric.
Make it symmetric. Then.
Otherwise, you will have no unitary limit, for example.
No, you need to use control of the tunneling amplitude to the individual levels.
Okay.
Just tune it until you get
yes, and maybe I just will show you how this picture reflects again to the face. So this is the face for the same system. What we have? We have increase by pi at high temperature. Increase by pi, decrease by pi, increase by pi, decrease by pi, and so on. This is spin 1/2, spin 1, spin 1/2. But now due to this ferromagnetic effect, what we have for low temperature. We have Kondo effect here, which means that you have half of pi here, but here you have nothing, so you go just back to the original phase. Again, increase by half of here. Okay, here you have usual picture for low temperature. Here you have this half of pi, and here again you have half of pi, and some half of pi drop in the valley. So this is the new feature. You may have half of pi drops in the valleys. Due to this, again, trivial fact, due to this change from ferromagnetic to anti-ferromagnetic coupling.
The most dramatic thing you are really saying is that within one valley, you let the Kondo effect in half the valley.
Yes.
In the conductors, forget about the
valley. Yes. And that's, okay, I do not know what is it, but you see, this is always like in these experiments. You have something clear for one valley, but then for preceding valley and for next valley, you have something which nobody say you what they see. So this is the last experiment, where they see the unitary limit in the conductance. They see this very strange phase in this unitary limit. But here they see something. For example, here we have some phase jump, which is clearly much smaller than pi. I do not know. This is what they say or not, but okay. And maybe the last thing also, it's people always forget it's Kondo. It's everybody think about Kondo. But what happens just for spin zero? I mean, if you would like to repeat the experiment to see something clearly, and it happens that just for spin zero valleys. So if you want a method to measure the spin of a valley, if you use this Aronov bomb setup to measure the spin, but for spin zero, you have just most clear prediction, because what you may have for spin zero? For spin zero is the only situation where you indeed measure the amplitude. And what may be the phase lag for spin zero? Phase lag for spin zero means that you have incoming wave, you have reflected wave, you have transmitted wave. Phase lapse means that you have some zero of a transmitted wave. But if you, so T of E is equal to zero at some value of energy. But you see what you use, after all, you solve some kind of Schrodinger equation. So you have the zero of transmitted, you solve Schrodinger equation, and you have real boundary condition. Zero of transmitted wave means nothing here. So you solve the Schrodinger equation with real boundary condition, nothing to the right. This means if you find the solution, the complex conjugated should be also the solution. This means if you have node here, you have complex conjugated node. And this means that the only thing that you may have imaginary part of this energy equal to zero. This means that you may only have the nodes on the real axis. So this will be the true nodes of the amplitude. And this means that in this case, at zero temperature, you have the abrupt change of phase. And if you have finite temperature, it will be exponentially small. It will be due to this internal excitation in the quantum dot with Aregan-Geffen mechanism. So this exponential dependence of the width of this phase drop, it's probably very hard to measure, but it will be much more clear than much more clear signature than all what I have. Explain. And so, I have to finish. So, we have very simple picture for spin 1/2 for that problem, which was expected to be really hard. Due to this simple picture, you may easily extend it to see a lot of exotics in any combination. Just simple perturbative calculation. And okay, and spin zero is also, it's trivial, but it's forgotten by everybody. Thank you.
Questions?
I have a question about those experiments. As far as I understand, they measured many Aronov bomb periods in there, which means that they put many flux quanta to this.
Yes.
Right? And I also saw in the picture that the area of the dot was not that small compared to the area of the circle. Maybe about I mean, if you put one flux on the dot, you can induce some transmission.
I never asked them about the value. The only thing I remember that Leo Koenhoven once told me what was the magnetic field used in the Heibloom's experiment, so it's very endearing. But what he tells that the phase, the magnetic field was few units of Gauss. And in order to see something, to change something in magnetic, you have these few Tesla, which I don't remember. Tesla is 10 to 3 or 10 to 4 of Gauss.
Somehow, naively, semi-classically, in the dot, you spend a lot of time before exiting. So a small flux that you accumulate while you are in the dot.
No, but I think anyway you need something like one flux per dot. If you have much smaller than one flux per area of a dot, you will see nothing, I think.
I'm saying a simple thing. Suppose you have a dot that's spin zero, and then you apply a magnetic field perpendicular to that, and say you have one flux, between zero and one flux quantum straight in this dot. And I think you can see a transition from spin zero to spin one. Ground state of the dot just because you change level space. So when they measure many around the computers, they can go through such a transition in one of these.
Bishop, what I may say, it's my impression. My impression is that the magnetic field used for creation of this Aronov bomb effect was at least, say, three orders of magnitude small. It's my impression. It's not very, so you have to ask experimentally.
Okay.
So it's three orders of magnitude smaller than needed to see any interesting physics in the quantum dot. So this three orders of magnitude, they prevent you.
The area of the
okay, this is from Leo, but
if you look at the picture, that picture of the experiment.
But you see, they never have, say, more than 10 of these oscillations, so it's not also very many.
The area of the dot is probably 1/5 of the area of the dot.
It's much less.
Much less?
You know, it's less than the dot you see in the picture, even, because.
Okay, then give me this number, this is what I'm asking.
I think it's less than 100.
Okay.
Because the real area is smaller than what you see in the gates, okay. Because it's
an
not by such a huge factor. The whole dot is supposed to be a few hundred angstroms.
Okay.
Especially the contour region, and make it as small as. It's actually as small as the limit that they can make. I mean, this is just by memory, I'm not responsible for this. But I'm pretty sure that the dot is like 300 angstroms, and the ring is a micro. So it's a factor of 30 squared, which is, as you said, a factor of 1,000. But of course, they could willingly go to what you said. That's very interesting. But
well,
I don't think
I think the simpler is the better. But what you're thinking.
Misha, maybe you confuse the geometrical size and the area. The geometrical size of a dot is something like 5 times smaller than the. But the area, so if size is 5 times smaller, the area is 25 times smaller.
The area is something where the electrons live,
right?
I don't know how better define it. And what Joe is saying that, okay, it's all right to have 10 or 15 periods of Aronov bomb oscillation and still less than one flux through this area of the dot.
That's what it seems. I think by the time we have 100, I would start to be worried.
Okay.
It's really probably a few hundred, something like that. But it could be done, no problem. But we're talking about less than
I don't think this should be done because I think we need to understand
the point. Yeah. Okay. 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 And then it is not visible in transport, but it is only visible in a phase-dependent measurement.
Yes.
Because phase-dependent measurements are more difficult to do than the transport measurements. Okay, now also you invent an experiment, which is V0 dependent, but which is more simple to execute. So I feel sort of uncomfortable with the idea that there is a physical phenomenon which only shows up in the phase-dependent measurements and not in any other measurements that I could do in such an object. That's something I feel uncomfortable with.
K The only immediate answer is, they say, you may have usual transport measurements, say, and you may subtract. By measuring Kondo effect, you may measure the magnetic pattern and then try to subtract it, but I don't know. No, but that's clear, yes. You have this rich behavior of phase, but it's all about the north of a wave function. So it's you go to the region which is more hard to measure. That's true.
More questions? What can you see under experimental indication that you really go through a state in which the quantum dot has spin one? Yeah, because I think usually they say 0-1 or the UN, and with small interaction it's more or less what you expect. Oh. But they can measure the spin independently, right?
And independently, I do not know. They measure that there is something which happens. There is something which happens in this Colombo Cate Valley. Some lines of.
But I mean, can in a measurement, can they identify that as the
what is rival theoretical model? I don't think so. So they may see some pitches like that, and they have some very pronounced behavior here, which you may compare with theoretical curves. Mm-hmm. That may be done. But how to measure independently that you have for sure here spin 0, here spin 1, I don't know.
With a parallel field or something like that, and they do? I don't know. Okay, well, stay on. Our question, let's thank you again.